Blog Talk Radio.
Everyone, this is Marty Oakley of the PPJ Gazette Online, and this is the TS Radio Network. Our show tonight is Whistleblowers, as you all know. We normally are on Thursday nights, but because this year the 4th of July falls on Thursday, we're doing our show tonight. And I know there's a lot of interest in this show and a lot of people that have been buzzing about it all day long, and this is quite a story. I want to preface it by saying, of course, the show is brought to you in coordination with Marcel Reed and the Whistleblower Summit. That'll take place this year from July 29th through August 1st, August 1st being their new film festival that'll be a recurring event each year. And everybody is cordially invited. We can use all the boots on the ground we can get, and it is a wonderful place to meet other whistleblowers, activists, advocates, people that are boots on the ground trying to make a change. It is an experience you just can't imagine. So if you can make it out to the summit, it is a wonderful event, and it's enlightening to say the least, or either that or you're going to feel like you got struck by lightning. But it just depends on who you are. But anyway, our show tonight, of course, is Whistleblowers. And we have Barry Tall on, and you may – many of you recognize him. He was recently featured on the CBS series Whistleblowers. And he has quite a story. Now, I want to say in advance of this, CBS to me has become the equivalent of tabloid, you know, those newspapers you see at the checkout at the grocery store. As I told someone earlier, you know, they got a story on the front that says an alien landed on my roof and planted my garden for me. That this is the kind of thing they do. This show, although there was a lot of excitement and still is about it, is actually meant to condition the public to the idea that these people blow the whistle only so that they can make money. And the sad truth of the matter is, rarely do any of them see anything. Anything, even if they are awarded a sizable award for doing what they are required by law to do, the IRS immediately runs in and takes it. If they don't take all of it, the attorneys eat up what's left. Or like in a case down in Texas, they freeze the award so that nobody can get it. Well, the IRS does and the attorneys do, but whatever's left, the victim, the targeted victim here, the whistleblower, gets nothing or very little. So, you know, this, I want to make this clear. While I think this show in its premise, you know, caused a lot of excitement, this is programming. This is programming. It's conditioning you to believe that this is why these people did what they did. And that isn't why they did, especially in the case tonight. Barry has quite a story. And as he'll tell you later on in this interview, he didn't know such a thing was even available. He was simply doing what he thought was right. And this is how he got repaid. So with that, Barry, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. I'm glad to be here.
Yeah, I'm glad you're here too. Barry, just to give everybody a little bit of background who might not have seen the CBS series or know about your case, could you tell them a little bit about what happened here?
Okay. I have worked my entire adult life in the death care industry as a funeral director and embalmer. And I was working at an establishment as an embalmer and had accidentally walked in on a meeting and heard some things I wasn't supposed to hear. And I knew, I didn't know exactly what was going on, but I knew what I did hear wasn't, you know, something that should be going on. So I just excused myself and went back to the embalming room, went back to work. The owner of the business came in a few minutes later to kind of, I guess, see what I had heard. It's important to understand that the owner of this business was meeting with the director and the his assistant or the executive director of the Alabama Organ Center. At the location I worked, all the bone and tissue donations, not organ, but bone and tissue donations in the state of Alabama took place at our location. We would bring them there. The team would come in, harvest the tissue, and then the body would be taken to the funeral home of the family's choice. What was happening was the two individuals from the organ center were getting 10% of what we bill or what that establishment billed the organ center every month. So if that was $60,000, each one of them was getting $6,000 tax-free, a kickback. And you know, those monies that come for that, because it never costs the family a money to donate. The monies that come to pay for these programs come through Medicare, government grants, state grants, taxpayers' dollars, in other words.
Right.
Well, after I found out what was going on and to the extent, I was a target then. It was a small establishment. It was just a driver and me and the owner. We weren't a full-service funeral home. We were just an embalming service. The owner started just doing some horrible things to me. He would throw feces from a deceased person at me. I remember one time he took a catheter from a deceased person, and I was eating lunch. I didn't know he was coming up behind me and just poured it down my back.
Oh, my God.
Emptied it out onto my back. He would just randomly slap me open-handed, things like that. But it progressed from there, from the physical to, we had a cremator as well, that I'll cremate you alive if you ever let this out. I know where your parents live. I know where your daughter lives. I know where you live. You know, this type of thing, threatening my family. So that's when I thought, I've got to get out of here.
You think?
So, So I thought it best not to just make an abrupt move because,
right,
especially while he's in this heightened sense of anger here. So I just waited my time. So it took me about 3 months. I found a job at another funeral home in the Birmingham area and put in my notice, went to that funeral home. Well, he still didn't stop. I had been at the funeral home and everything was going great. And I was getting, you know, some attaboys from the higher ups. About, I guess, a year into that, they started receiving typed on a typewriter letters that weren't signed, anonymous letters, alleging that I was stealing from them. I was this, I was that. I said, open books, look at anything you want to. I've not taken a nickel from you. But anyway, the letters kept coming, kept coming, kept coming, and they let me go. Just because of the, you know, constant bad news,
yes,
I guess you would say, coming from, couldn't have been anyone but him. And then after that, I'd been in the funeral business in Birmingham since I was 18. Not everybody in the funeral business, but over half, I would say a majority of the people I knew just would have nothing to do with me. You know, I couldn't get a job. I couldn't do anything. So, that's led to me just now trade embalming. That's a term in the industry. It just means freelance embalming for funeral home. Funeral home A needs an embalmer, theirs is out, or maybe they're overloaded. You know, I just embalm where I'm needed now. So,
right.
So that's where I am. I had my vehicle broken into, my house was broken into, vehicle broken into 3 times. Can't prove who did it. Seen him driving, the gentleman driving through my neighborhood. I would be cutting grass, and he would. He'd be at the end of the block, make sure I saw him, and then slowly pull off. So just an intimidation type thing.
Yes.
You know, so it went on and on.
But, Barry, can I ask you a question that keeps rolling through my mind here? You talk about this, the tissue and bone harvesting. Now, was this done with the family's knowledge or
yes.
no?
Yes. No,
okay.
It was. Absolutely.
So it,
absolutely.
Okay. I just wondered
everything
because
as far
we...
as any tissue or bone or anything that was harvested at that location, it was all on the up and up, and the harvesting was all done correctly and to, you know, protocol. The the two directors came by once a month to sit down with him and get their bill correct. And then he would mail it, and then they would approve it, and it would get paid. What I heard when I came into the meeting was the owner of my boss say to them, you know, if you're wanting more money, then you're going to have to pad these bills a little bit better.
Oh.
And see, I didn't know. I didn't know exactly what that meant, but I knew it didn't mean anything good.
Right. Right. So, well, what you're talking about here, Barry, is one of the things, it seems unrelated, but it's all part of this system that is running between hospice, dialysis, all these different, $60 billion a year is defrauded out of Medicare through just exactly what you're talking about, the padding of bills, what they call upbilling, padding for services never rendered. All kinds of things. So to hear you say this, and I know that part of what you got paid for, like you say, were these government programs. These also get hit hard, too, with this this unscrupulous activity. It's all about money, and there isn't enough oversight. And when there is oversight, it's always from people within that agency or within that sector who are doing everything they can to protect everything the way it is. So
well,
that
was happening here. They were policing themselves. So when he sent a bill that was not quite right, of course they would initial off on it and say, yeah, pay that. You know, the more that he paid to them, the more they got back. So.
Right. It just, and also what you're speaking about too, of what was done to you, this is very, very common. This thing of stalking, harassing, intimidation, retaliation, threatening your family, threatening you, character assassination. Mm-hmm. And the one thing most whistleblowers face that's worse, I think, than a lot of things and not as bad as others, but the fact is the inability or the difficulty in getting another job because these people will never stop coming. They will keep coming after you. They will If it's planting fake articles about you that somebody supposedly wrote that you know, they saw you dancing naked in the town square and practicing witchcraft, and they'll print it like it's a true story. You know what I'm saying? Just ridiculous stuff. Anything.
Absolutely.
To ruin your character.
And, it's absolutely happened to me. I mean, there's been more than one job that I've taught with the owners of a funeral home or managers of a funeral home that I've known for years. And they've just said, you know, that I'm just not going to be able to do anything. Wouldn't come right out and tell me, but I've never had a problem getting a job. I've never had a problem with my reputation. At one time, I was the person that people wanted to work with or wanted me to work for them. Those days are over. So, it's very sad. This has been my passion since I was 18, you know.
Wow. This is just how long did you stay once this became an issue? And again, how long did you stay there, Barry, trying to get past it?
About 3 months.
Okay. All right. And so 3 months of him throwing feces at you, and I think at one time you said he would pull bandages and throw them at you. And
right,
I mean, this
is
Barry, you told me something that this man did for entertainment having to do with the homeless. Would you mind repeating that on here?
Sure. There was an alley behind the mortuary. They had, you know, we had garage doors in the back and alley there. There's a dumpster on the other side of the alley. And in the evening, a lot of the homeless population would make their way down that alley, going to where they stay the night on down the road. Well, he would take a bottle, like a Jack Daniels bottle or bourbon bottle of some kind, and still have a little bit in it, you know, maybe,
uh-huh.
I mean, just a very little amount. And then he would urinate in the bottle to fill it up to about an inch of liquid in the bottom, be the color of bourbon, and just sit it there with a top screwed on it by that dumpster. And every single time, one of those people would pick the bottle up and drink it.
Oh, God.
And he would laugh for hours. That was the funniest thing he had ever seen.
Honest to God.
He would shoot at them with a BB gun, but be way back up in the garage where they couldn't see him.
Jeez. And just, oh, my God. Okay.
I mean, that's just the way he got it. He was just, that it just made him happy. He was just so, he just.
Sick.
You know. Yeah, sick.
Very, not to bring the story to a close too quickly, because we've got a lot to talk about. But what happened to this guy?
In, I believe it was October of last year, if I'm not mistaken, he had bought a home in Michigan and was riding on, he had a Harley Davidson there, a new Harley Davidson, and he hit a deer and was killed in that accident.
I'll be darned,
in
isn't
Michigan.
That something?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, somebody, I bet he hit a deer. we hear this all the time. Well, I'm sorry, but, you know, it's like here a couple of years ago with the banking scandal, and that some of these top bankers were going to start blowing the whistle on world banking and all of this, and they were flying off the tops of buildings reasons unknown, committing suicide. One even shot himself in the back of the head 5 or 6 times with a nail gun. And
very
flexible. Yes, and suicided. And we've had naturalist doctors found floating, you know, 13 of them in 1 month, who were out against chemotherapy and radiation, and they just ended up in the river for some reason, and nobody seemed to be alarmed. But, you know, the thing is, Barry, I mean, we had a Supreme Court justice, Anton Scalia, who died down in Texas on John Poindexter's special ranch, and Poindexter, before anybody could get him write it up to say the right thing, came out and said, I found him with his hands up in the air and a pillow over his face. Well, they tried to pull that, and they were pretty successful in doing it. But we basically had a Supreme Court justice who was a strict constitutionalist. The last one on that court ends up dead. They call a magistrate 30 miles away who never sees him and says it was a natural death. Imagine that. And you could have heard the crickets chirping in D.C. I'm telling you, nobody said a freaking word. So when people like you come out, and we've talked to so many of them on this show, and these people are just, they're at their wits' end about what they have been subjected to, what these agencies do to them, in your case, what your employer did, and got away with. And yet, here we have this CBS show trying to present it as if, and like I say, on the surface, Barry, it looks like, you know, we're trying to get these whistleblowers out there. But this is done in a very calculated way. This was done to make you and everybody else that appears on that show appear as if you did it specifically and only because you thought you were going to get a big payoff. And you didn't know anything about that, did you?
No idea. I had talked with the FBI for, gosh, months on a regular basis, sometimes several times a week, going to the FBI office and on the phone, and had no idea any money was there was a program where that was even available. But, you know, then I found out, and of course, I was awarded a settlement, but I've not seen a dime of that. And doubt very seriously I will, but I you know, it's not only the trauma and what they do to you while you're working there or while you're going through the process of exposing this, then when everything's done, everything's settled down and everybody's gone back to their regular life, here I sit, now what? You know?
Yeah.
I'm kind of damaged goods in a lot of ways to a lot of people.
Yes. And that, and this is part of what runs behind this, this destroying of these people who had the backbone and the integrity to stand up and say, wait a minute, this shouldn't be happening. You're not supposed to be doing this. And
right.
This is the payoff. This is the payoff. I mean, you get terrorized, your family gets terrorized, your property destroyed, your name destroyed, and like I say, the inability to get gainful employment afterwards, because if you put them down or they have do any search on you at all, they come up with all this crap that's been loaded on the internet about you. Mm-hmm. I've seen stuff posted about me. I thought, darn, I wish I'd have been there. That sounded like fun. And why didn't anybody invite me? And
yeah, I could enjoy that.
But you know what I'm saying? And this is the kind of thing they do constantly. We hear this constantly, that this is what's done. This is a standard method of operation. And it was the one thing I don't see exposed, like on the CBS whistleblowers thing. They want to get down to this thing of you got to pay off, you got to pay off. And as I said earlier, what happens is even if you do, the IRS will come and seize every bit of it immediately. And if they don't take it all, the attorneys will take the rest. And if mm-hmm. you get anything at all, it won't be enough to buy a postage stamp. But they always say, like this case in Texas that I was just told about, there's a $16 million award. The guy that got that award, the IRS took every dime of it. And then the attorneys, except a few thousand dollars, and then the attorneys took the rest. He's been living with his parents ever since, can't get a job. They're still, and that's the part that bothers me most about this. It's bad enough what they do to you while you go through this process, but they never stop. They never, they're worse than Scientology. They never stop harassing you. As it stands right now, you went to court. What was that mm-hmm. like, Barry? What was that like?
It was a week long, a week and a day, and it was pretty cut and dried. My attorney just with the documentation, his own documentation, the defendant's documentation, went through everything that happened in the program, the donor program, and from the paperwork being generated at the mortuary to the first person that opened the envelope in it at the organ center, all the way up to the two gentlemen who went to prison for this, and how everything happened. And in doing that, he was able to take the actual documents and show how they were fudged and added to and padded and this type thing. And the two gentlemen that the director and assistant, they admitted, that's what we did. You know, of course, they both went to prison for a year. When it was over, the jury came back and found him, you know, liable. It wasn't a criminal court. They found him liable for every bit of it. Uh-huh. The judge awarded $14.7 million to be paid to the government, and of that 14.7, I was supposed to receive a little over 4.
Uh-huh.
But none of that's out.
Right.
But
you're living large.
But he was, you know, there's some satisfaction in knowing, though, that right won, you know.
Yes.
Right won. There's never a wrong time to do the right thing. And my grandfather used to say, right will win in the end. You may not live to see it. I may not live to see it, but it always wins. And it did in this case. Now, as far as the financial end of it, not so much. But as far as saying, hey, that's wrong, you did wrong, right won.
Well, you know what bothers me, you know, you see, like in your case, this payback to the government, because they were bilking government programs. And you see this in several things like pharmaceuticals. They got fined $1 billion, or this one got fined $550,000. But you never see any evidence anywhere that money was ever paid. Ever paid. I have looked at the unified and the simplified budgets put out every year by the federal government, Barry. And the simplified budget is what's presented to the public, and it's a limited scope of what we spent and what we owe. very limited. Mm-hmm. But the unified budget is everything. It's everything. And there is never any evidence on that budget of any monies received from any of these big corporations or any of these government incentive programs that these fines that were assessed, even under these, and I don't know if you want to pronounce it KITAM or KITAM, depends on who you talk to, cases mm-hmm. where the public actually sues on behalf of the government because the government isn't doing their job. And they should have gone after it and did it. But there's never any record anywhere of an influx of cash from these settlements that should have gone back into the federal treasury. And it's never there. So I always question that. I always question, did they pay the money? And if they paid the money, who got it? And where is
it? Yeah,
who
they paid
it
to,
in?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Where is it locked
and
in
meanwhile,
at?
Meanwhile, you know, I have no retirement now because I had to go those years that was going on trying to, you know, trying to keep afloat, you know, using my retirement and quite honestly just struggling, you know.
Yes.
Don't mind
they
working,
don't
not afraid of work, but just I gotta have somebody hire me.
Now, see, if I had a business, Barry, you'd be the kind of person I'd be looking for. And
I appreciate that.
I would be looking for somebody like you. The worst thing that can happen to any business owner or anybody running an agency is to have a corrupt agent operating in it because it makes the whole place look bad. And in your case, you know, it tainted this business. As far as how this man met his demise, that for some reason I keep thinking of the Enron scandal and Ken Lay, who was at the top of that, supposedly died in a skiing accident out in Vail, Colorado, right before he was to go to court. And of course, this was one of the biggest bilkings of the federal government and the public ever happened. And he supposedly dies in a skiing accident in Vail, Colorado, except there was no obituary anywhere. There was no record of any funeral or cremation service of any kind. There was nothing. He just simply disappeared. And I've always assumed that man's living pleasantly on a Caribbean island somewhere, enjoying himself. He was close friends with the Bushes and too well connected to go out like that. And so this guy at the top, I wonder, you know, my mind immediately goes, yeah, dear, right. And he's walking. I live up here in Minnesota, Barry. We know about deer and your vehicle. We, you know what I'm saying, it's just deer up here are the size of moose. And you hit a deer, it'll take the whole damn front end out of your car. And but it's seldom they will, you know. And even if we've had them hit with motorcycles too. And you might get severely injured, but it's a rare thing other than some venison that'll come out of that. But, you know, I'm always suspicious when I hear these key people met an untimely demise just in the nick of time. And that's
right,
just me after years of dealing with this stuff. It's like, yeah, wait a minute. I want to see the deer, you know.
Makes you wonder, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. Yes, it does. And, you know, it's just too convenient too many times. When you were in the courtroom, I can't imagine with your attorney having assembled all of this documentation that basically is just nailing them to the wall, and they had no choice but to admit, yeah, we did this. Did their attorney put up any kind of a counter, any kind of a defense for them at all?
He said that was just that he was the kickbacks he was giving, if I'm not mistaken, he said that was just gifts he was giving to the other parties. And of course they admitted it, went to prison for those gifts, but he was giving them gifts and that we just didn't understand the accounting. He said that I was a rat and just wanting money. That's all there was to it.
Oh, darn you, anyway. And it cost you your career and all this stress and all of your savings for your retirement and cost you everything else, and you were just in it for the money. Yeah, that makes sense to me. It is such a a load to take on to do this. And we've talked with so many of these people that have been through this process of whistleblowing. And you would think the public, of course, they're brainwashed. They listen to it. I don't even have like cable in my house. I refuse to these what? So-called news stations actually just drive me up the wall. They talk about fake news. If you want fake news, just tune into any one of the cable networks. You can get all of it that you can hold. And but then we had the president coming out and referring to whistleblowers as leakers, trying to change the narrative, to convince the public that these were bad people. They were telling government secrets. Well, nobody, you didn't expose any government secret. What you exposed was fraud and abuse of the system that was costing taxpayers money.
Right.
So
right.
I always have a problem with people who say, well, you know, they're just looking for money, or they just want to, and they have no clue what you go through. No clue.
Mm-hmm.
I just feel so bad. We got a caller on here, Barry, and I know who this is. This is Sean Higgins. Sean, say hello to Barry.
Yes, how you doing, Marty?
I'm doing good. Hello. Sean, Barry, Sean is a big on the VA. He has exposed the Memphis VA so many times, had it on national media, been all over the radio. This man made a career out of getting hired and fired by the VA. And he knows everything you're talking about firsthand. Oh, go ahead there, Barry. Sean, are you going to talk? Please don't go quiet on me. Not now.
Oh, no. I'm hearing you say it, Barry.
Go ahead.
I'm here. There, I understand everything that you've gone through, and it goes on for years and years.
Mm-hmm.
How they ruin your reputation where you can't get any work. That's
right.
the saddest part.
That's
about
the worst
it all,
part, I think.
Is mm-hmm. that you can't move on. And
right.
From a mental health standpoint, I've been doing this 10 years. And I suffer from post-traumatic stress, and I can't get past it because every time I start to heal, some court proceeding comes up, and they rip the scab right off that thing, and
oh, wow.
start back well, over. So
man, you're right back where you
I
started from.
It. Correct.
Yeah. Barry, have they made any effort at all to reopen this with you, or to bring you back to court, or to contact you in any way since this came to a conclusion, or supposedly did?
No, they haven't at all. Hopefully I don't have to go back or do anything, but so far they haven't contacted me about anything. No.
Okay. Barry, let me ask you
this. Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to ask you, did you get the FBI involved? We have tried to get them involved. I mean, taken absolute U-Haul trucks of information to them, and they won't touch it. They can't do that. How did you manage in a private sector job to get them involved?
I had a friend who was a assistant district attorney in this region. I told him about the situation, and he said, let me call the FBI because that'll be a federal thing. And he did, and the FBI agent called me.
Oh, wow. So we all need friends like that. We all need friends like that.
Well, because I didn't know where to go. You know, I didn't know what agency to present it to.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I knew he would.
So,
yeah. Most people don't.
Has any of the information that you give it out come back to you? Has any of the information that you gave the FBI come back to you publicly?
Not except for what was in the trial, no.
Okay. So they didn't violate your – a lot of times what happens is they won't – I know specifically with the FBI is if you want to remain anonymous, they won't investigate. So you have to give up your name. And usually when you give up your name, you give up – they tell it. So the same people that you told on, you know, are free to retaliate.
Right.
So there's no anonymity.
Yeah.
Because
right.
if you want to remain anonymous, then they won't investigate. So then you give up your name, and then when you give up your name, then you basically give them permission to tell.
Mm-hmm. Well, they didn't. My name didn't surface until it was well into. You know, they had already kind of, I guess, vetted me out that what I was saying was true, and that's when it came out.
Yeah.
Oh,
wow.
So during the investigation, they knew nothing. They just found out when it was all disclosed in the
right.
server.
Right. Right.
Okay.
Okay,
yeah.
But Sean, you see, that's the difference between you were working in a federal agency and he was working in the private sector. So we don't have any big agency heads. Yeah, go ahead.
I understand the difference in the two, but what I'm failing to see is why he ain't got no money. He's in the private sector. You're supposed to get, according to the FBI, you're supposed to get 10% of that, 10% of what you say to federal government. So I don't understand why he hasn't gotten paid. Now with the federal government, the VA, I haven't known of anybody to ever get any money blowing a whistle,
right?
Unless you strike some secret deal with the VA.
Wow,
that's how it works basically with the federal government. You basically got to strike a secret deal, and basically when you do that, it suppresses it. You settle and they say, okay, you can't talk about this for 50 years. You know, like in my case, they wanted to settle with me, but they told me that, hey, I couldn't seek employment with them for the next 20 years if I accepted the settlement.
And the settlement wasn't
a year's salary. So
they make it
almost impossible. I'm out of work 18 months, so you already owe me back pay for 18 months, and then I'm going to settle for less than the annual salary, and then I can't talk about it.
Well,
so Barry,
were you gagged in any kind of way as a result? Were you told you couldn't talk about it, or?
Not really. The attorney that represented me, I mean, there wasn't a gag order from the court, just the attorney that represented me felt like it would be better for the case if I just didn't mention anything up until the time, until the case was, you know.
Settled.
Completed. Yeah. Right, right.
Right. Okay,
So there was nothing in the settlement that you could actually talk about. You could talk about what was given in the settlement? Well, I understand why you can talk now, because basically you haven't gotten any money, so they breached that agreement, so you can talk about it. They haven't paid
you
any money, so the agreement has been breached.
Well, that's it. You know, Barry, that's like I said, you know, too, this is my problem with this CBS series. On the one hand, you're appreciative that they're giving these people that, and they're basically addressing people that come out of these federal agencies. But they're emphasizing they got a cash award, but they don't go far enough and say, but they never got it. Or that when it was awarded to them, the IRS ran in and took it. Why the IRS should be able to do this, I don't know. But they came in and took it, and whatever was left, the attorneys ate up. And did you have to pay for your attorney, or in the end, did they have to pay your attorney fees?
It will, if I do receive a settlement, it will come out of that.
Okay.
Since he won the case, they pay attorney fees.
Yeah.
That's generally awarded. But that's what you get. I look at one of my cases. My attorney got $50,000, and I haven't gotten the money from the first settlement. So you know, it's a corrupt system.
Yeah.
I mean,
yes, it is.
The only people that are getting rich are the lawyers. It's like Marcel and I discussed. We call them two cam chases. It's because basically that's what they all are. And CBS CBS is giving the real whistleblowers a real bad name right now, because
yes.
that's the new, that's what people are looking at as the new hustle. Hey, you know, you
yes.
go to the whistle and get paid millions.
Yes,
so,
exactly. And that is the way
that's
the way they're trying
and
to portray it today. It's done in a very insidious way, but that is the message that they are trying to get across to the public, is these people, wasn't that they had integrity or character. It wasn't that they were required by law to do this. And if they didn't do it and they knew about it, they found out about it later, they could be held equally liable because they did know and they didn't say anything. They don't talk about that either.
Well, and
they
in my
try
case
to make
in the
it.
Federal government, that is the case.
Yeah. And
I could have been held liable because I knew and I didn't report.
Yes.
So
you're
absolutely correct.
Yeah, and so they're trying to present this, like you say, Sean, like it's some kind of new hustle. I'll make money by blowing the whistle on this or that. I really don't care about the issue. I just want the money. And this is the way CBS is trying to present this. I think it's egregious. I'm going to have to write them another letter. I wrote them one after they did that.
I made mention to it to the actual judge that's on the case. The actual judge that's on the show, Judge Carrera, I made mention to it. If you go back and look at my Twitter feed, you can go back and see. I made it clear to him. And the only thing he could bring up was one case. Out of the many cases they've had, they have only had one case where the guy didn't get paid.
Yeah, right, because they didn't look for
so,
any.
You know,
and they dismissed
right.
the ones
it's
that.
It's the glorification. The lawyers get paid, and the more money, the more you can publicize it. It's all about the dollar.
There you go. All right. Well, Sean, did you have anything else to add here so we can get back with Barry here and get rolling?
Well, not really. I'm enjoying the show. I appreciate you letting me comment. Keep your head up, though, Barry.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you for calling in, Sean. And
no problem.
I hear this from so many people, and I've heard this about this CBS series, all the excitement about it, and yet they are trying to present this like this is a new hustle, this is a new scam, and it isn't that your employer or this federal agency was scamming anybody. It was that you are trying to scam. You know, you're trying to make fast, easy money.
Blind pockets.
Yeah, it just I think it's a disgrace. I truly do. Moving forward with this, what are you doing now? Like you say, you're working independently, basically, as I understand it, on an on-call basis.
Right, just embalming as I'm needed, and
constantly
looking, you know.
Yeah.
So.
And as you, yeah. I think what bothers me, too, is you talked about the fact that people you knew in that business for years, who knew you,
mm-hmm.
who knew you were a stand-up guy, you know what I'm saying, and
right.
won't hire you? Won't
right.
hire you?
Right.
What's wrong with these people? I mean, unless they're running the same thing, you know, on different levels. Let me ask you this. How big is this business of tissue and bone harvesting and that kind of thing?
Well, it's tremendous when you take a statewide on that level. It's tremendous.
Wow.
I mean, I
now,
don't know
fan-
any numbers I could give you, but it is
yeah.
it is it's huge.
Yeah. And like you say, the family does know about it, does know they're
Absolutely.
Doing this today. Did they
get
compensated?
No, they're not compensated, but they're not charged anything either. You know, they know about it and, sign the authorizations and
mm-hmm.
for them to do that.
Well, and the thing on that is, see, it's illegal to sell.
Right.
So this is what I'm trying to figure out with, I'm trying
well,
to figure
money,
out. Yes, yes.
Well, the money wasn't coming from sales. It was coming from use of facilities.
Oh,
and,
okay.
Picking the body up and bringing it to those facilities, the charge for
oh.
that. So.
Oh, So they laundered it through the system that way. And that way you can't be nailed for selling. I want to make clear what Barry was doing was not organ harvesting like heart, lungs, liver, that kind of thing. That was done at the hospital.
And the organ center's teams came in and did the bone and tissue. I'm just an embalmer. That's all I did was embalm.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So, and where do these teams come from, Barry? They come from the hospital or are they special?
Yeah, from the hospital. The organ center, the main, I guess you'd say headquarters in Alabama is here in Birmingham at UAB Hospital.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And they would come from there.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Okay. This is just, I think what's bothering me too is we have states like New York that are trying to make everybody an organ donor, whether they want to be or not. And, you know, as you and I talked about, one thing I learned recently about organ harvesting, when it's the internal vitals, is that this is done on the live individual. The person is not dead. You can't, dead person's organs have no value.
They're on
for
artificial,
transplant.
You know, yeah, they're being kept alive artificially. Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, I didn't understand that about New York because everybody certainly isn't a candidate for to be an organ donor.
Right.
You know?
Well, you have to, so, like when you get your driver's license and it says, you know, check this if you want to be an organ donor, even if you don't check it, you have not opted out. You have to go into the DMV and fill out a special card. Otherwise, even if that isn't checked on there, they consider you to be a voluntary organ donor because there is no place for you to check to say, no, I do not want to be an organ donor. But what I see happening here and I've seen more and more articles about the organ harvesting and how there's this terrible shortage of organs. And my question is, what happened to the population that so many people are needing organ transplants? What's going on?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sorry, you know. That.
Yeah, I don't know. That's a very good question.
Yeah.
It seems that kidneys and livers and hearts are always in demand. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know what has happened.
Yeah, and I've thought too, Barry, about, like, you know, and like I say, I'll give credit to, like, St. Jude's and the Shriners Hospital for Children.
Mm-hmm.
For treating these children for cancer. But I'm of an age, when I grew up, I knew of one kid who had bone cancer in high school.
Right.
And you never heard of it.
Very, very common now. I don't know.
Yes. And you hear all the time of babies. I mean, this is their big play on these commercials. They show these babies and toddlers that have cancer.
Right.
What is going on?
I don't know.
That this was okay. And, you know, with all that's going on, and here you are at the tail end of the business, basically, at the end of life, and they're still trying to make money.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? We have been commodified to such an extent that we're parceled out, and now you're being sold for parts, basically, just like a used car. being so hard. Well, is it any different, really? What's, you know,
well,
when you take somebody's heart?
I've seen your analogy, that's for sure. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, or you take a starter or, you know, whatever off a car, an alternator, you basically are doing the same thing.
Right.
You're creating a secondary market, and they have created this secondary market for human body parts. And I want to know, what's going on that so much of this is needed? Did all of this go for, like, bone transplants and things, or buried, or if you even know, or did it go for research? What was the purpose of needing
Some went for research. The bones, a lot of times, are used in surgeries, orthopedic surgeries, to mend different areas. I mean, putting an entire bone in someone, that wouldn't be feasible, I don't think. But just taking part of that bone and you know, using it to fix or repair damage that's done in an accident or something like that with a knee or whatever, that's that's what those are used for.
Okay.
They're not just placed in whole like a heart is whole or a liver is whole, you know.
Right. Mm-hmm. Okay, and then I knew it used to be there was a lot of danger in this because they didn't do any checking of that bone or anything else, you know, like for disease or anything else. But you said that now they do. They're cleaned and inspected. And,
oh, it, so, and, yeah. And before the body, there's a thorough history and quite a bit of research done on that person prior to the bone being harvested or the tissue being harvested. There's a tremendous amount of research done on that person and prior to, you know. And like you said, though, some of it does go for research. To, you know, that's how they learn to, I guess, new surgical procedures or whatever. But but that's
well, you know, the thing is,
go ahead.
Even it, with all of that, even with all of that, at what point did they decide that this was a profitable business? You know what I'm saying? That that profit should be made from doing this. I can see doing the research. I can see all of that, Barry. If it helps anyone, but it seems to me that the bulk of this is never about helping anyone. It's only about, always about, how much money can we make doing this? And
well, they are a nonprofit organization. And that should tell you everything.
Okay.
So as far as, you know, their inner workings financially, I don't know. I do know they're a nonprofit. And but there's a tremendous amount of money available to them, and that's know that's what they were siphoning out for themselves.
Can I ask you? I've got a question that came in here asking why you weren't allowed to do the bone and tissue harvesting if you're a licensed embalmer, but you were only licensed for just that one thing, right?
Right. I'm a licensed funeral director and a licensed embalmer. I have, according to the job description and the for tissue procurement technicians, what they call them that take the bones, I have all the qualifications for that. But that was a different company that just used our embalming room to take the tissue, so rented our place basically. So all I did was embalm, and that's why.
Okay. Well, and I don't know if I could personally – well, I couldn't embalm, to tell you the truth, Barry. And just like when I go, somebody please just strike the match because you'll never get my makeup and my hair right anyway. And but it just, you know, have a party. But and I know there's a lot of people that would. She's gone. But, you know, what I'm saying, it just – you know, trying to clarify the parameters of what you were working within here. When you went to the FBI and you started talking to them, what was their response to what you were telling them?
Well, at first they didn't quite, you know, they seemed to be a little concerned about what makes this a federal case. I see what you're saying is going on. I see that that's wrong, but how is this federal? And when I told them the funding for these programs, not all of it, but a lot of it comes from federal grants and Medicare money, and you know, then they kind of perked up. Well, this is a federal case. Tell us more about it and how exactly, from point A to as far as you know, how it works. And they listened up and took those notes down. I guess it took him about a week or so to digest. I dealt with the same agent all the way through, and he would call me and say, you know, this afternoon you think you maybe run by, or when can you? I got some more questions, and, you know, go by and go over things with him that he might, you know, he might have questions about. So it took several months for all that to be put into place. So he asked a lot of, you know, a lot of questions and wanted to know every just detail of why.
Right.
Because, you know, the funeral industry, like any other business, has its own language, you know.
Yes.
like all businesses do, and our own code, I guess you'd say. So he wanted to know all of that, what that meant, when that would be used, and you know, he was just very, very thorough. So
good. I'm glad to hear that.
I was impressed. Yeah, I was very impressed with him. I really was.
Okay, with the people you were working for, let me ask you this. When did they find out, and how did they find out they were under investigation?
Of course, I was already gone from the place.
Okay.
And the FBI raided the Alabama Organ Center.
Oh.
And took out a bunch of paperwork and all. The two directors happened to be there, and when they got to them, they said, how come you're getting these checks every month, these personal checks? Well, that's this, that, no, why are you getting them? And then finally they said, yeah, it's kickbacks, and this is why. They pled guilty and went to federal prison, both of them. At the same time, they raided the mortuary and got a bunch of files and things like that out of there and froze his bank accounts and did all that.
Right.
So,
all right.
They knew the morning they were raided, I guess you'd say.
Yeah. Wow. That must have come as a shock. So, okay, now to get this in the timeline, the guy that owned the place, this guy that was such a jerk, how did he end up out in Michigan? And, in the timeline of things, how did he end up out there?
He is from Iowa originally.
Okay.
And we, the court case, you know, the Keytown case I was involved in was over on February 6th. That's when the verdict came in, of 2018. Then in October is when he was killed, but he had bought a land up there, a lot up there at Torts Lake, and was building a house, and a quite nice house, and it was finished, and he was kind of living some of his time up there and some down here, I think. I'm not sure about that. But he was up there, and, around dusk, from what I understand, on his Harley, and hit a deer.
Hit a deer, isn't that something?
So,
Yeah. Who'd have thunk it? And, let me ask you this, and we talked about this also, and you were talking about the cost of funerals. I mean, they are making a fortune on these funerals anyway. I don't see any reason why kickbacks should have ever been even considered, considering the money they make off the funeral itself. Can you talk a little bit about what?
Sure. The Organ Center part wasn't involved with the funeral at all. They were just renting the room to do their harvesting. But the funerals, some of them have these tremendous buildings to support, and there's some lifestyles that have to be supported. But the people that own the funeral homes for the most part, they make quite a good living. The worker bees down at the bottom, they don't. They scrape right along, but they do it because that's what we do. I mean, that's what I'm supposed to do. Okay. That's where I belong. And, if you built right and you, as far as your funeral home, built it appropriately, you can still have a nice funeral home that can service your people and do a funeral for quite a bit less, there's no doubt. You know?
Right.
And I think people would respond to that without any problem, you know.
Right. Well, and it seems to me, I personally don't believe in anything but cremation, but that's just me.
Uh-huh.
I think planting a body in the ground is a terrible waste of land, and we ain't making any more of it. And what's the point? I mean, I don't understand storing a dead body in the ground. It never has appealed to me. I don't want to be in the dark. And but you know what I'm saying? The whole process to me seemed like ooh.
A good funeral or cremation has absolutely nothing to do with what you pay for it. A good funeral is a service or a time where friends and family can gather and remember that person's life, what made them cry, what made them laugh, what made them angry, their idiosyncrasies, all those things, their favorite music, this, that, and the other. For years and years, burial is just a method of disposition. It's the method. We got to do something with the body. We can't just keep them. So for years and years, burial was the way. Cremation is also coming up as a way. There's some other things about to come on the front here that you'll see. And, you know, that's why I say it's not necessarily about what you pay for it. I think if you have a direct cremation, I think that's fine. But I think let me give you an example. I waited on a family about 5 years ago. When I say waited on a family, I mean I made arrangements with them. Grandmother had died. They wanted to have just a direct cremation. That's it. She had outlived all of her friends. So she had one son and about four grandchildren and their spouses and the one son's spouse. Well, they all came in to make arrangements. While we were making arrangements, they talked about grandmother's spaghetti and homemade spaghetti sauce. And that it was a family recipe, she said, had been handed down through the generations, the spaghetti sauce. But it was the most awful, horrible thing you could barely swallow. But grandma thought it was wonderful. So when they would go to her house for a family dinner, she'd always treat them to spaghetti with this toxic spaghetti sauce. Well, they said, we're going to cremate her, and we're all going to get together over at grandma's house, and we're all going to take our part, and we're going to make spaghetti and this awful sauce just by the recipe, and we're going to choke it down one more time as a memorial to grandmother. And I thought, you know, that is about as good as it gets right there.
Yeah, no kidding. I've always told my son that, you know, when it comes time, like, say, strike the match, I don't want any crying, I don't want any boo-hooing. Wait a while, and then throw a big party. And eat, drink, and be merry, and play all the music I love, which is 70s R&B and soul, 60s, 70s, that stuff. I just live on it. Play my music. Mm-hmm. I'll be there. I promise you, I'll be there.
Well, be sure you get the timeline down, because I've had funerals where we had crying, and we had the party come in right and try to mix them two together and get the drunks to one side and the others to the other side. That can be a challenge. You think I'm kidding, but it does happen.
Oh, I know it does. I know it does. As you move forward through all of this, Barry, what would you like to see happen? I mean, in the context of everything you discovered, everything you've endured, and where you are now, what is it you would like to see happen, first and foremost?
I would like to just be able to do my job, or have a job, do my job, and just settle into the masses of suburbia here. Just not be noticed, or, you know, there's nothing special about me. Just be Barry, you know?
Just be yourself.
Just a regular life. Yeah, just a regular life. Nothing, not all the stress, not having to check behind your back and look at all this stuff. Just go through life and have it like it used to be, you know?
Go ahead, Barry.
I'd like my life back, you know?
Yeah.
I'd like my life back. They're not actively harassing me now. Well, one of them is dead. They're not actively harassing me now. But because they were actively harassing me, that's left over. And my possibilities for a job are just, you know, I have a few funeral homes that'll let me embalm for them, but I'm in after hours. The public never sees me. I would like to be able to, I've done this long enough at every level in the death care field that, you know, there's so many things the average American doesn't know. And it's not necessarily that the funeral director is keeping it from you, but there's a lot of things the American public could know prior to making arrangements when they're when they don't need to make arrangements, and you know, they're level-headed thinking about future, that could you know, really help them out when the time does come. So
right. Wow. It just, and I think people are so stymied by it, and I think, Barry, too, so many people are afraid of death. I have no idea why. It's coming for all of us. You know, get used to the idea. Sooner or later, your number's going to be up. And
that's right.
I think it should just be a time of, you know, well, this is where we're at. You're going to grieve. Yes, you are. You're going to grieve that person being gone. And, like I say, in my case, there's going to be a lot of people throwing parties. I mean, that's just all there is to it. And but as long as you remember me, that's all
right.
I care about, you know, good or bad.
Right.
As long as you remember me.
That's right.
So, but I feel bad. How did, as all this was going on and you talked about your family being, you know, targeted and threatened and everything, how did your family deal with all this, Barry?
I did not let my children know anything was going on.
Right.
Except I have one son-in-law that's a deputy sheriff. And he and I talked in confidence about what we could do and what needed to be done. And just kind of made those things happen in a way that nobody really noticed it, you know. And I was more on guard here at where I live, my house, and my parents' house. My mother just turned 90, and you know, she's you know, doesn't need to be bothered with that type of thing. So I knew if I told her ahead of time, this would be something she would worry about for 5 years, you know.
Right.
So just to make sure that everything's watched and taken care of, and like we did, and it worked. Things seemed to work out well. None of their property or anything was touched. It was seemed to all be, you know, just me. And so that was, you know, and it wasn't major. They would do things like, you know, break into my truck, take everything out of it and put it in my front yard and leave the doors open. You know, no tremendous damage, just stuff to know, you know, hey, somebody's been here.
Yeah.
That type.
And you couldn't stop us. Yeah. I have a whistleblower down in Louisiana, Therese Simon. And I interviewed him here a couple years back, and he had been a VA whistleblower on the Houston VA. And what he had noticed is, much like Sean at the VA there in Memphis, that there were some problems. In the case of Houston, it was a contaminated water supply that they were making ice out of for the surgical bays and some of it for organ transplanting and harvesting and so on. And the ice was contaminated with this debris, which turned out to be coming from a break in the water line from the city of Houston into the hospital. So all of this mess is seeping into their water supply. He went through the chain of command, and they turned on this kid like pit vipers. He lasted 2 years, hung in there, just lasted 2 years. But, you know, like what you're talking about, what they did to you, they went into his community. Even after he moved back to Louisiana from Houston, they went into his community. They spread rumors about him. They, you know, said terrible things about him. They do things like gaslighting. They, you know, things that make you look like you're crazy. That just what they've done, even his own family. This is why I asked. He came to mind when you were talking. His own family became suspicious of him, which hurt him terribly. How he's hung in there, I don't know. But his fear for his family, I think superseded everything else.
Well, it has to, you know.
Yes.
That's the only thing that keeps you going, you know.
Yeah.
It has to. Just the drive to make sure they're safe, they're okay, and shield them from as much as possible. You know, that's the only thing you can do.
What did you do? This to save this was nerve-wracking is an understatement. How did you handle all the stress, Barry?
Well, I didn't handle it too well. I was being an embalmer, you're up all hours of the night anyway, because you get calls right. in the middle of the night and you go, that type of thing. But
right.
I there were several nights I was just watching, standing at the front, watching constantly, taking different ways home, maybe coming home in the middle of the day to see if things were, when I wasn't supposed to be there, that type
right.
of thing. I had a whole list of tag numbers of cars I didn't recognize in the community. It just bordered on, well, I won't say paranoid, let's just say hypervigilant.
Cautious to
keep that, I just wanted to try to stay one step ahead. Obviously, I didn't in the cases that I mentioned, but I don't know how many cases I did stay one step ahead that never materialized because I was there. Hopefully that did pay off. Lost a lot of sleep. Just a lot of sleep. Health,
right.
Declined. But that's what you do. I mean, you got to take care of your own. And
exactly.
I just
wondered, because
you
I know
a situation where I could just come in and just jump in the bed and say, well, 99, it wasn't like that.
Yeah,
for sure.
Right.
So I don't know. It's a crazy thing. And that part still bothers me some. The main part now, I've dealt with the economic part all through it, but it is really beginning to be just, I'm just at my wits end there. I don't know what to do. But that doesn't mean it'll always, but I'll figure something out,
Yeah. Well, like I say, I think to me, the worst part of this, you were well known in your community for what you did. You were respected for what you did. You had a good reputation. And, to have it trashed like this when you did the right thing. And, I can't stress this enough. When people like Barry step out, whether it's in the private sector, as is here, where they're milking these federal programs, or if it's in a federal agency and they're, getting bonuses and kickbacks and all this stuff and abusing and the fraud and the waste, we don't punish people for doing. These are the people that need to be rewarded, whether it's just simply the recognition that they had enough integrity to do it when nobody else would. But bear in mind that everything he's talking about and all of our whistleblowers that have been on have talked about is everything that he's talking about is costing you, the taxpayer, money. These inflated programs where they have to keep throwing more money and more money at them, these like cash incentivized programs, which is apparently what was going on in your state, and I'm sure every state, where it's tied to the federals, and they get so much cash money for doing X, right? And the ways people will find to abuse those systems just always amazes me. The flagrant violation of what they should be doing as opposed to what they are doing and putting money ahead of everything else. And this all comes out of our pockets. Every bit of this comes out of our pockets. We finance this. And when we don't stand up and back these people up, because believe me, like I say, CBS's thing that this is the new hustle is blowing the whistle. That's crap. I think we all need to write CBS a letter and let them know what we think. Because this is such a disservice to the country to present this in this way. I'm glad they had you on there or I wouldn't have known about you. But this, what you weren't in this for the money. Didn't know
right.
there was any money available. You thought you were doing the right thing and you thought this was, they'd take care of this and you'd move on with your life. And it looks to me like you got, like so many whistleblowers, you may not have gone into an actual prison, but you were put in a prison of a different kind. You were put in a prison in your community. You were, you're an outlier. You're operating outside of everybody else. because you did the right thing. And I think that's a sad statement, too, about our society, that we're so quick to believe that, well, they must have had an ulterior, well, they only did this because of the money. And then here you are, right. You didn't even know there was anything attached to this, and you've never gotten anything anyway. And
I had no idea.
I know you said you've been married 17 years, and how did this affect your relationship, Barry? If that's not too personal, if you don't want to.
No, absolutely not. That's probably the best thing about the entire story is that it made it that much stronger.
Oh, bless you.
When I got to where I was just about to say, I can't do this, she said, you can do this.
Oh, God.
I can't do this. We can do this. She walked every step with me and felt every bit of it. And she's my best friend, biggest cheerleader, and she's the reason that everything worked out, I think, as well as it did. It worked. It did. It made it our relationship much more stronger, more intimate, on an intellectual basis even, you know.
Yes, yes. And that's so important because too many times in these cases, we see families just torn apart. The stress becomes so bad, and the family becomes fearful, or the spouse does, or they start feeling the stress too, you know. Mm-hmm. And we've seen families absolutely disintegrate behind this. People just don't understand the price you pay.
It affects every single aspect of your life. Every single aspect of your life is affected.
Wow.
Everything. Economically, physically, spiritually, mentally, emotionally, vocationally. Every single aspect is affected.
And they leave no stone unturned either.
Oh, no, no.
Yeah. Mm-mm. Yeah, I just got a message from Sean here. He said, we really don't care about recognition. It's about holding people accountable so we don't feel like we wasted our time or sacrifices. Well said, Sean.
That's true. It would not have mattered to me if I'd ever had my name mentioned in a public forum for doing this. My motivation was that what was going on needed to stop. It needed to stop. And as far as Barry Tall, I'm just Barry Tall, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And that's the thing, too. And he makes a good point. I haven't talked to any of these. Well, I should take that back. There have been a couple of people involved in different issues that obviously are involved in it for self-promotion or, you know what I'm saying, trying to get notoriety, whatever. But those people you quickly weed out and push off to the side and move on because you can pick that up right now. But the majority, I would say 99% of the people I have spoken with, interviewed, talked with, you know, at various times, it isn't about them. It's about what they discovered. It's about what they are trying to get out to the public is going on. And, you know, until people understand, you literally put your life on every level on the line for doing this.
Mm-hmm.
So, well, like I say, when the president of the United States comes out and tries to redefine you as a leaker, as though you have exposed some secret of national security. I have figured out, Barry, that national security means them and not us. National security is protecting the government. It doesn't have squat to do with us out here in no man's land. But a lot of people have objected to this trying to redefine you as a leaker. You exposed something that was a deep, dark secret that could affect the safety of us all. No, I don't think so. It's going to affect our checkbooks, most definitely. And it's going to affect our quality of life, sure enough. You know, as far as any other interest, I just don't get it. But I know whistleblowing has become it's become quite a topic in the news. When you see a station like CBS pick it up, you know, I would like to think, but like I say, I've seen them do hatchet jobs on like Gene Kasem and other people when they had enough evidence sitting there, they could have had the story of the century. They did everything to twist that story and malign her. And I've seen them do other things. And then when I saw and heard what was going on these whistleblowers shows, they are looking for people. They don't care about the people who never got anything, which is, like I say, 99% of them. They're looking for that 1% that got this supposed award, but they don't go far enough to tell you they never got it, or they got just a small fraction of it. And that is, again, like I say, conditioning the public to think you're in it for the money. And so I thought it was important to bring out the fact that you did not know, had no idea that there was any such thing available. You were just simply trying to do the right thing. And, you know, I don't know, Barry, I don't know where we go from all of this. I truly don't. I worry about you and your family. You know, I realize this has gone to court and one person supposedly hit a deer and left the planet. And I say, I want to see the deer. And, but,
you know, we just keep doing what we're doing. You know, you do you do the right thing, just keep doing it, and it eventually pays off. You know,
I hope so.
And I do too. Something'll break shortly. It's not. I mean, I'm doing everything I can every day, whether it's in the funeral business or not. It may be cutting somebody's grass or cleaning their gutters out or whatever I can do. You know,
right.
To bring a dollar in, I do whatever I have to.
Bless your heart. And, you know, and a lot of people, I've seen a lot of the whistleblowers do the same thing. They'll take little flip burgers at McDonald's if they have to. They'll do whatever to survive. And
right.
But we don't talk about that side of the story, you know. it just, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
That's that part of the story never comes out. The devastation that is caused to the family, to your income, to your employment, to every aspect of your life. They don't talk about
right.
that publicly. So, and well, and then the whistleblower summit, that's what this is about. It's about not only exposing what they found, but what was done to them as a result of them exposing it. I wish I had the money, I'd get you out there to the summit. Just to, well, there's a lot of people like, oh, it's,
I imagine
it's quite
it'll be a wonderful thing.
It is.
What
and
to
you're,
learn.
Yes. And these people have been put through the mill. I'm not kidding you. They have, what these people have endured, Barry, is just incredible on so many levels, and that they're still standing and they're still talking. They're bringing out what's going on. This summit thing has become huge, and there's a lot of people concerned about that. It was never supposed to get there. Wasn't supposed to do that.
Right.
You
right.
know? And so it is quite the event. And but you meet so many good people that, you know, are trying to do the right thing. The networking people can tell you where to move next. You know what I mean? What your next move should be, what they tried, what didn't work, what will work. I mean, there's just so much information to be gotten there. You, I think, were very fortunate in that you had this friend who got you to the FBI and that you got an agent at the FBI who took you seriously and worked through this with you, because that is extremely rare, extremely rare. So kudos to whoever that agent was. Because too many times we've had people chased out of FBI buildings with an agent behind them screaming and don't ever come back here again. And but it's so this that gives me some hope too. This has been inspiring. And
well,
I love
good.
The part about I'm seriously and I love the part about you and your wife hanging together and her support of you. That is just yes, that's the way it's supposed to be. That's the way it's
that's
supposed
right.
to be. Glad she was there for you. And apparently
that's
still is.
Still is, absolutely.
Yep. It just, even though you're cleaning gutters and mowing lawns. Now that's true love, Barry.
That it is. That
it
is.
It is. You're a very fortunate man. And it's a very rare commodity these days. But we're coming up on the last half hour here. We got about 5 minutes, and we'll break. Was there anything you wanted to add before we – I think we've pretty well covered everything.
I think we have. I don't have anything to add except to say I really appreciate, you know, you having me on and wanting to share my story. I really do.
Well, I appreciated having you on. I think I would like to meet you in person and your wife. I think you're exceptional people. And
that'd be fantastic. We'd love that.
Yep. And I may be moving down into the Georgia, South Georgia area this fall. So that might be possible.
Come on down to the deep south. You'll love it down here.
Oh, I used to live down there in Atlanta. Yes,
okay.
I did. And yeah, I lived there for about 15, 16 years. So, Barry, I want to thank you so much for coming on. It was an honor to have you on here this evening. And I want to thank everybody that tuned in. I know we're cutting this a little short, but I think we've, like I say, covered everything. And we've learned a lot. And please, 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 if you don't do anything else, drop a letter to the producers at CBS and tell them to cover these cases a little more honestly. And like in Barry's case, the fact that this man has never gotten a dime, not a dime, and is mowing yards and cleaning gutters to keep going. And he was saving y'all money. The least you could do is drop a letter. And that's my thoughts
for the day.
And listen,
if you ever have any questions or need anything, just feel free to give me a buzz. I'm you know how to get me.
I know. Don't worry.
Okay.
Excuse me. I will.
Okay.
Thank you, Barry, for being my guest.
All right. Thank you.
All right.
Bye-bye.
And everybody that tuned in tonight, thank you so much. I know this was a bang-up show. So many of you, the board's loaded. This was a feel-good interview for me. And the reason it was because this man climbed the mountain. And they tried to knock him off the top, and he's still up there. Regardless of what they did to him, he did the right thing for the right reasons. And he wasn't looking for a payoff, regardless of how they're presenting this to the public. And most of these whistleblowers are not. They're trying to do the right thing. The least you can do is support them. Support them. And when you see these trash articles come out about it, you know, these, oh, they're leakers and they're this and that, get in there, put your 2 cents worth in, and call them out on it. Because these people need our support. Period. And I mean it. Anyway. We will be back after, the 4th is Thursday, so we'll be back the following Thursday on our regular night for whistleblowers. In the meantime, thank you for tuning in. We'll be back, and all of y'all enjoy the 4th of July. Have a great weekend, everybody. Bye-bye.